Chapter 41 Pitt's worst fears were confirmed when he hovered the helicopter above the Alhambra. No one stood on the deck to greet the craft and its passengers. The ferry looked deserted. The auto deck was empty, as was the wheelhouse. The boat was not riding at anchor, nor was she drifting. Her hull was resting lightly in the water, only 2 meters above the silt of the shallow bottom. To all appearances, she looked like a ship that had been abandoned by her crew. The sea was calm, and there was no pitch or roll. Pitt lowered the helicopter onto the wood deck and shut down the engines as soon as the tires touched down. He sat there as the sound of the turbine and rotor blades slowly died into a morbid silence. He waited a full minute, but no one appeared. He opened the entry door and dropped to the deck. Then he stood there waiting for something to happen. Finally, a man stepped from behind a stairwell and approached, coming to a halt about 5 meters, 16 feet from the chopper. Even without the phony white hair and beard, Pitt easily recognized the man who had impersonated Dr. Stephen Miller in Peru. He was smiling as if he'd caught a record fish. "A little off your beat, aren't you?" said Pitt, unruffled. "You seem to be my never-ending nemesis, Mr. Pitt. A quality that thrills me no end. What name are you going under today?" "Not that it's of use to you, but I am Cyrus Saracen. I can't say I'm pleased to see you again." Saracen moved closer, peering over Pitt's shoulder at the interior of the helicopter. His face lost the gloating smile and twisted into tense concern. "You are alone? Where are the others?" "What others?" Pitt asked innocently. "Dr. Kelsey, Miles Rogers, and your friend Albert Giordino." "Since you have the passenger list memorized, you tell me." "Please, Mr. Pitt, you would do well not to toy with me," Saracen warned him. "They were hungry, so I dropped them off at a seafood restaurant in San Felipe." "You're lying." Pitt didn't take his gaze off Saracen to scan the decks of the ferry. Guns were trained on him. That was a certainty he knew without question. He stood his ground and faced Miller's killer as if he didn't have a care in the world. "So sue me," Pitt retorted, and laughed. "You're hardly in a position to be contemptuous," Saracen said coldly. "Perhaps you don't realize the seriousness of your situation." "I think I do," said Pitt, still smiling. "You want Huascar's treasure, and you'd murder half the good citizens of Mexico to get it." "Fortunately, that won't be necessary. I do admit, however, 2/3 of $1 billion makes an enticing incentive." "Aren't you interested in knowing how and why we were conducting our search at the same time as yours?" asked Pitt. It was Saracen's turn to laugh. "After a little persuasion, Mr. Gunn and Congresswoman Smith were most cooperative in telling me about Drake's quipu." "Not very smart. Torturing a United States legislator and the deputy director of a national science agency. But effective, nonetheless." "Where are my friends and the ferry's crew?" "I wondered when you'd get around to that question." "Do you want to work out a deal?" Pitt didn't miss the predator's eyes staring unblinkingly in an attempt to intimidate. He stared back piercingly. "Or do you want to strike up the music and dance?" Saracen shook his head. "I see no reason why I should bargain. You have nothing to trade. You're obviously not a man I can trust. And I have all the chips. In short, Mr. Pitt, you have lost the game before you draw your cards." "Then you can afford to be a magnanimous winner and produce my friends." Saracen made a thoughtful shrug, raised his hand, and made a beckoning gesture. "The least I can do before I hang some heavy weights on you and drop you over the side." 4 burly, dark-skinned men, who looked like bouncers hired from local cantinas, prodded the captives from the passageway with automatic rifles. and lined them up on the deck behind Saracen. Gordo Padilla came first, followed by Jesus, Gatto, and the assistant engineer whose name Pitt could not recall ever hearing. The bruises and dried blood on their faces showed they had been knocked around but were not hurt seriously. Gunn had not gotten off so lightly. He had to be half-dragged from the passageway. He had been badly beaten, and Pitt could see the blotches of blood on his shirt and the crude rags wrapped around his hands. Then Lauren was standing there, her face drawn and her lips and cheeks swollen and puffed up as though stung by bees. Her hair was disheveled and purplish bruises showed on her arms and legs. Yet she still held her head proudly and shook off the guards' hands as they roughly pushed her forward. Her expression was one of defiance until she saw Pitt standing there. Then it turned to cruel disappointment, and she moaned in despair. "Oh, no, Dirk," she exclaimed. "They've got you, too." Gunn painfully raised his head and muttered through lips that were split and bleeding. "I tried to warn you, but—" His voice went too soft to be understood. Saracen smiled, unfeeling. "I think what Mr. Gunn means to say is that he and your crew were overpowered by my men after they kindly allowed us to board your ferry from a chartered fishing boat after begging to borrow your radio." Pitt's anger came within a millimeter of driving him to inflict pain on those who had brutalized his friends. He took a deep breath to regain control. He swore under his breath that the man standing in front of him would pay. Not now, but the time would surely come if he didn't try anything foolish. He glanced casually toward the nearest railing, gauging its distance and height. Then he turned back to Saracen. "I don't like big, tough men who beat up defenseless women," he said conversationally. "And for what purpose? The location of the treasure is no secret to you." "Then it's true," Saracen said with a pleased expression. "You found the beast that guards the gold on the top of Cerro El Capirote. If you had dropped for a closer look instead of playing peekaboo in the clouds, you'd have seen the beast for yourself." Pitt's last words brought a flicker of curiosity to the beady eyes. "You were aware you were being followed?" asked Saracen. "It goes without saying that you would have searched for our helicopter after our chance meeting in the air yesterday. My guess is you checked out landing fields on both sides of the gulf last night and asked questions, until someone in San Felipe innocently pointed the way to our ferry." "You're very astute." "Not really. I made the mistake of overestimating you. I didn't think you'd act like a reckless amateur and begin mutilating the competition, an act that was completely unwarranted." Puzzlement filled Saracen's eyes. "What goes on here, Pitt?" "All part of the plan," answered Pitt, almost jovially. "I purposely led you to the jackpot." "A barefaced lie." "You've been set up, pal. Get wise. Why do you think I let off Dr. Kelsey, Rogers, and Giordino before I returned to the ferry? To keep them out of your dirty hands, that's why." Saracen said slowly, "You couldn't have known we were going to capture your boat before you came back." "Not with any certainty. Let's say my intuition was working overtime. That and the fact my radio calls to the ferry went unanswered." A shrewd, hyena-like look slowly spread across Saracen's face. "Nice try, Pitt. You'd make an excellent writer of children's stories." "You don't believe me?" Pitt asked, as if surprised. "Not a word." "What are you going to do with us?" Saracen looked disgustingly cheerful. "You're more naive than I gave you credit for. You know full well what's going to happen to you. Crowding your luck, aren't you, Saracen? Murdering Congresswoman Smith will bring half the United States law enforcement officers down around your neck." "Nobody will know she was murdered," he said impassively. "Your ferry boat will simply go to the bottom with all hands. An unfortunate accident that is never fully solved." There were still Kelsey, Giordino, and Rogers. They're safe and sound in California, ready to spill the story to customs and FBI agents. "We are not in the United States. We're in the sovereign nation of Mexico. The local authorities will conduct an extensive investigation, but will turn up no evidence of foul play, despite unfounded accusations from your friends. With close to $1 billion at stake, I should have known you'd be generous in buying the cooperation of local officials." "They couldn't wait to sign on board after we promised them a share of the treasure," Saracen boasted. "Considering how much there is to go around," said Pitt, "you could afford to play Santa Claus." Saracen looked at the setting sun. "It's getting late in the day. I think we've chatted long enough." He turned and spoke a name that sent a shiver through Pitt. "Tupac, come and say hello to the man who made you impotent." Tupac Amaru stepped from behind one of the guards and stood in front of Pitt, his teeth set and grinning like a skull on a pirate's Jolly Roger flag. He had the joyful but clinical look of a butcher sizing up a slab of prime, specially aged beef. "I told you I would make you suffer as you made me," Amaro said ominously. Pitt studied the evil face with a strangely paralyzed intensity. He didn't need a football coach to diagram what was in store for him. He braced his body to begin the scheme he had formed in the back of his mind right after he had stepped out of the helicopter. He moved toward Lauren, but stepped slightly sideways and inconspicuously began to hyperventilate. "If you are the one who harmed Congresswoman Smith, you will die as surely as you stand there with that stupid look on your face." Saracen laughed. "No, no, you, Mr. Pitt, are not going to kill anybody." "Neither are you. Even in Mexico you'd hang if there was a witness to your executions." "I'd be the first to admit it." Saracen surveyed Pitt inquiringly. "But what witness are you talking about?" He paused to sweep an arm around the empty sea. "As you can see, the nearest land is empty desert, 20 kilometers away, and the only vessel in sight is our fishing boat standing off the starboard bow." Pitt tilted his head up and stared at the wheelhouse. "What about the ferryboat's pilot?" All the heads turned as one, all, that is, except Guns. He nodded unobserved at Pitt and then raised a hand, pointing at the empty pilot house. "Hide, Pedro!" he cried loudly. "Run and hide!" 3 seconds were all Pitt needed. 3 seconds to run 4 steps and leap over the railing into the sea. Two of the guards caught the sudden movement from the edge of their vision, whirled and fired one quick burst from their automatic rifles on reflex. But they fired high, and they fired late. Pitt had struck the water and vanished into the murky depths.